Can you hear us? Yeah. We actually didn't prepare who's going to start.
We can play rock.
You want to go first? I go first? I'll go first. Do you mind? As it's.
I got one.
Hello, everyone. My name is Magen Inon. I'm originally from Israel, currently living in London with my family. But all my extended family is still in Israel. I'm the youngest of five siblings. And I'll start with a bit about the events of the last year. And I will say that we're planning to talk for a few minutes, but then we'll open up for questions. And hopefully you'll see that we invite tough questions, that's absolutely fine. So if something comes up when I'm talking and you want us to talk about it further, then we're welcoming questions later. So the village where I was raised is called Netiva Asara. It is the closest Israeli village to the Gaza Strip. It's right on the border with the northern part of the Gaza Strip, and the nearest houses are mere maybe 50 meters. It's that close. I remember it as I had this pastoral childhood, these beautiful sand dunes, very close to the Mediterranean Sea, just a very lovely childhood as a child growing up in that area. But also, as time went on, the situation with Gaza deteriorated, and the village started having quite regular sirens because there were missile attacks coming from Gaza. And about 10, 15 years ago, there was a very high wall built between the village and the Gaza Strip, and the border became a much more a presence in our minds. All my siblings have moved out of the village to live in other places in Israel, but my parents still lived in the village. Me and my family would normally go on long holidays there. We were there the entire summer. My wife and three kids. But my parents still lived in the village, and on October 7th, Hamas terrorists infiltrated the village from the Gaza border, and very quick in Netiva Asara, within an hour, they murdered 20 people in the community, very sadly, my parents did not survive the attack. It was the most horrible day in my life. And I woke up early morning. My kids are early risers. They're like proper farming family. Woke me up very early, and we started I was seeing the WhatsApp messages buzzing. We had this one last communication with my parents where they said they're hiding, they've locked the house and they're in their safe room. And that was the last message we got from them. It took a few hours. There was so much uncertainty. No one knew what is happening. It took a few hours until we managed to get in touch with one of the neighbors. And there was no official announcement, but we realized after a few hours that it is unlikely they survived. And I was already looking for flights so that I can go to Israel and be with my siblings. And on October 8th, midday, I was already in Israel. To share the grief and the pain with my siblings and my nieces and nephews in Israel. And in Jewish tradition, there's something called a shiva. It's when a loved one dies, you gather around in a particular place, usually the family house somewhere, and you invite people for 1 week to come for a little bit, tell you stories about your loved one, share your pain and pay their condolences. And we invited people to come to my sister's place in center Israel. And she has a big garden. And we had thousands of people come. It was really, that week was a whole lifetime. And now I realize it's quite unique, but it felt so natural to us. We had people come from every possible community you can think of. Because those were my parents. My dad's best friend, his name is Khalil Al-Zayadna. He passed away a few years ago, but we're still very much in touch with the family. He comes from the Bedouin community. And they just grew up together in the fields when they were 20. Since they were 20 and became best friends. And my brother has a business in Nazareth, which is the largest Palestinian Arabic city in, within the 67 borders. So we had friends and colleagues coming from there. And we had Orthodox Haredi Jews that came because my dad helped them with agriculture and other things. And everybody was sitting together. And we also had, because we were the first family from the village to do this, to do Shiva, we had friends and from the community who lost loved ones and came in to be with us. To kind of support each other. And so this the unique, very, very unique experience, but again, this is the way we were raised. That's how our parents raised us, and that felt very natural. And after after a few days, so 7 days, the last day, all the guests leave, and finally, we have a quiet moment, the five of us, and we have a list of things that we need to talk about, decide. And one of the things at the top of the list is we saw that we're going to get a lot of media attention, partly because of my brother's business and his good links with journalists in Israel and worldwide. And we had some journalists coming to the Shiva, to the, that week of mourning, to be with us as friends. So we knew many people would want to know what we think. And also we started hearing people on social media, on mainstream media, calling for revenge. And it took us 2 minutes, the five siblings, to say we want to say revenge is not the legacy of our parents. We strongly believe that whatever steps we take, they must ultimately lead to a diplomatic process and to reconciliation and treat human beings as human beings. And so it was very, it really took, there was no argument. It was very 1 minute, 2 minutes, we've decided that this is what we want to say. And we did get a lot of media attention. It was overwhelming, to the extent that I think at first my brother thought he can do it himself, and then very quickly we realized, no, I will have to go on interviews, and my sisters will have to go on interviews, because there was so much. And we don't always say the same things. We not necessarily think the same, but the common foundation is there, like these common human values that we're trying to bring to the conversation. And one of the amazing thing, and at least at that moment I didn't expect it, is that very quickly we will find Palestinian partners who will share the stage with us and share our values and would be willing to address you and many others in a very similar way. And I think now is a good time to pass it to you, Aziz.
Thank you again.
Thanks.
Hi. So my name is Aziz. I'm from Jerusalem, grew up in East Jerusalem, Palestinian. And to grow up in East Jerusalem in the 80s, when I grew up, it was very difficult to almost explain to people who grew up in Germany. So I like to sometimes try to put you a bit of the mindset of a little child in East Jerusalem. So I'll ask you some questions and feel free to respond. When you went to school, when you were 6, 7 years old, what was the most important thing you had to take with you? Or what were the things you took with you to school?
Lunch,
yeah. I agree, lunch is very important. I remember the days I forgot lunch, those were not good days. What else?
School bag.
School bag? No homework? Germany is amazing, you didn't have homework? Okay. So I had to take with me something else. And it's related to the conflict, Israel-Palestine. Any guesses what that would be? My papers, okay. I try to, usually.
No, but ID, you mean
paper? Oh, my paper. Thank you. That's why we work together. It comes like a couple. You interpret each other. I was too young for those papers yet. 7 years old, you normally weren't asked for your papers. Any guesses? Had to take with me an onion. Let's see if you can guess why an onion.
Half an onion, right? So maybe it's...
No, because it will go rotting very quickly. Onion and a plastic knife.
Okay.
An onion and a plastic knife. Any guesses why? For crying. I mean, my family weren't that mean to me, but... So I can see none of you have ever been to a protest, so I'm giving you a crash course if you ever go to protest, what to do. Tear gas, exactly. So I'm the youngest of 7. I'm the youngest by 9 years by my next brother. I'm what you call the oops child. My parents didn't plan on me coming. And so also, it meant my older brother, the next one above me, Taysir, was in charge of my life because my parents were tired of raising 6 children. But like my first day in school, all of that. But I remember going to school when the first intifada started and there were tear gas shot at us. And I went back home and I told my mother, this is it. I think this school idea is a terrible idea. It's not worth dying for. And so I'm not going to school tomorrow. And she had to sit with me and convince me of going back to school. And one of the ways she did so was by giving me an onion and explaining to me, if you fire that tear gas and you cut an onion, you put it close to your nose, you breathe it through it, it helps you not suffocate. And it actually works. So through my whole elementary, middle school, I always had an onion with me because that was the most important, much more important than even homework, much more important than papers, much more important than anything else. Now, I tell you this because I grew up thinking every child everywhere in the world probably goes to school the same way because you think everyone is like you when you're a little kid. And so in my mind, you here in Germany probably also needed an onion to go to school. That's how a kid thinks. But you know, you think the same way probably every child around the world who grew up like you grew up in Germany. And so I just wanted to give you that example that our lives can be so different and we're not often aware of the reality of what somebody else lives through. My life changed completely when I was 9 years old. My brother Taysir, who I mentioned earlier, the one just older than me, was arrested from home and allegedly throwing rocks on Israeli soldiers, and he was taken to interrogation. Through the interrogation, he was tortured for the confession. Eventually, he did confess to whatever charges, was sentenced in prison. When he was released, he already was in a very terrible health condition. We took him to a hospital soon after he was released, had a surgery, and a few days after the surgery, he ended up dying from the beating, from the results of torture. And I was 10 years old at that time. He was 19 when he died. And again, you can put yourself in the mind of a 10-year-old child. If somebody kills your brother, what do you think? How do you respond? And, you know, again, you talked a lot about, like, it took you very quick to come to a decision. Revenge is not the way. But 10-year-old doesn't think in that way. A 10-year-old, if you killed my brother, I want you to suffer. I want you to... It changed my life completely. I was very angry. I was very bitter. And to me, the idea of revenge seemed the only path forward. And for the next 8 years, that was the only thing I focused on, is how do you get revenge? What do I do? I almost stopped going to class. To me, school became irrelevant. I became very active politically very quickly, became part of the leadership of the youth movement in Jerusalem, political youth movement. I'm good in writing, so I started writing articles, started doing mobilization, pamphlets, all that kind of stuff, until I was 18 years old. And when I was 18, I went through a transformation where I realized that I refused to study Hebrew when I was in high school, even though it was mandatory, because I thought Hebrew is the language of the enemy and I'm not going to learn it. I still passed all my exams, by the way. I'm not going to tell you how, though I see young people here and this is not good information for you.
They have other ways now.
they have to figure it on their own. But if you live in Jerusalem and you don't speak Hebrew, it's a big problem. You're not going to study, you're not going to work. So I went and enrolled in the best place to study Hebrew, which is Ulpan. Ulpan is where Jewish immigrants to Israel go to study Hebrew. Not many Palestinians go to study Hebrew there. So I was the only Palestinian in my Hebrew class. My teacher was a Jewish Israeli woman. The students with me were mostly Jewish immigrants, a couple of tourists. There was actually a German tourist, I now remember, like a German who wanted to learn Hebrew and came to study. And that was my first real human-to-human interaction with Israelis. I lived in East Jerusalem at that point. 200 meters from my house, there were Jewish people, Israelis, zero interaction. And again, you can live right next to somebody and be totally segregated. And that can be sometimes societal, sometimes can be actual checkpoints, sometimes can be pressure from fear, all kind of reasons. So we didn't get to know each other at all. My only interaction with Israelis were soldiers and settlers. And suddenly in that classroom, for the first time, we're able to sit, just like we're sitting here, as equals, and be able to have normal conversations, and be able to get to know each other. And it's through that experience that I went through my transformation, and I realized two things that are very important. The first one is that the idea that I had no choice is wrong. You cannot control what other people do, but you can always control how you respond. When I was 10 years old, I thought hate, revenge is the only path. But then I realized every time you choose to hate, that I was being a slave to the person who killed my brother. My decisions were not my own. My decisions were basically me reacting to that person and never deciding for my own what are the decisions I want to make. I realized that regardless of what other people do, I'm going to make a different choice. And we hear it today a lot. If you listen to the media, we are forced to do certain decisions. We have to go to war because they did this. We have to kill them because they did that. And if we live in that way, it's kind of an easy way to cop out, to say, it's not my responsibility. I punch you, but it's not my responsibility. It's because of the way you did something to me. However, we all should think about our own responsibility. The second thing that I realized was important is this whole concept, Israeli versus Palestinian, is a little problematic because it shouldn't be just like here. Megan and I are not on opposite sides. Yeah, he's Israeli, I'm Palestinian, but we fight for the same thing. We have the same values. And so if we believe in the same values, that's more important than your nationality. That actually who you are. Your values is who you are. And sometimes we quickly go into, well, he's Israeli, he's Palestinian, so it's opposite side. I think if people want to divide us, it shouldn't be Israeli versus Palestinian, Muslim versus Jewish. It should be those who believe in the values of equality, of justice, of dignity, of recognition, of reconciliation, of safety, and those who don't yet. And so from that moment on, my mission and my work has been focused on how we can work together and how we can convince who are not there yet to join us. And we can go into that, but maybe we can start with some questions, and through it we will answer to you probably some ideas we have about what are concrete steps all of us can do. Thank you.
Thank you.